You're listening to the On the Move podcast presented by Penske.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the On the Move podcast presented by Penske. I'm Tim McMaster along with Jim Duquette. This is the podcast where we talk about players on the move, teams on the move, front office people on the move, anybody that's on the move. And you can take that a lot of different directions, Duke. We are talking about them in this podcast. And we're going to start with the two hottest teams in baseball who are certainly on the move towards the postseason, and that is the Cleveland Indians, who, as we record this podcast, have won 15 in a row. That's a franchise record. And the Arizona Diamondbacks, who have won 13 in a row, that's a franchise record as well. It's happening at the same time, which is amazing. First time since 1900 that two teams have had at least 13-game win streaks at the same time. Let's start with the Indians. Both teams have gotten really good pitching, but the Indians' offense has been unbelievable, Duke.
It's incredible when you look at what they've had. They looked at the last month. They have eight players, and the worst OPS is Francisco Lindor in the low 800s.
Best player on the team.
Yeah, he's the best player on the team. He's the lowest OPS. It's over 800, which is above average for the position. I mean, they've had contributions from every position, and that's the thing that stands out. Obviously, the Jay Bruce trade has worked out really well, but you know, it's been without Michael Brantley. It's been without Jason Kipnis to some degree. Encarnacion has carried them. Chisenhall has come back. It really speaks to the depth overall. I mean, Jose Ramirez, you can't go without talking how much he has carried them in certain stretches. So I think, of all the teams that you look at, their offense has been tremendous. You touched on their pitching. I'll tell you the other thing that stands out to me, Tim, is their defense. Their defense is above average at almost every position. And until you get a chance to see them on an everyday basis, the metrics don't give them any justice. I think Lindor at shortstop, is kind of that leader in the glue of their entire defense. I mean, he'll make some spectacular plays. A couple weekends ago against the Yankees, I thought he changed the whole momentum of the game with a play to his backhand where he threw out the runner at first, made a great double play turn as well. So I think the team that is maybe the most well-rounded right now in the American League, and oh, by the way, they're on this win streak, is the Cleveland Indians. I'm not surprised by this. I don't know about you.
I was actually going to say that when you look at them right now and you look at the Astros, who are actually back to playing very good baseball as well, but I think you can certainly make the argument that on paper, heading into October right now, maybe the Indians have become the favorite.
I think you're right. And the reason why I believe that is their experience from last year really matters. I think going to as deep as they did, and they had a win streak last year that they just passed, obviously. Yeah. But they, from an offensive side of things, they're a little deeper. They've also done this, by the way, without Andrew Miller, in the bullpen. And if you look at all the different parts in their depth, I think that's what stands out is the depth overall, too. I do think this is a better team than it was last year. They seem to be healthier. If you remember down the stretch, they had those key injuries to both Carrasco and Salazar. Carrasco's back. Salazar is in the bullpen. Clevinger's pitched really well as a start. Like, everything seems to have come together for them and moving guys in around what Terry Francona does so well, their front office does so well, to be able to put an arm like that, like Salazar, in the bullpen it tells you how deep that they are.
Yeah, and it's a smart move, I think, as far as Salazar goes, because, still long-term, maybe next year he's back to being a starter and all that, but coming off of injury and knowing that he's not going to be one of those three or three and a half guys that are going to start games in the postseason, hey, get him in the bullpen now, get him comfortable and all of that. You mentioned Jose Ramirez, and in 2016, he became, obviously, because they made the run, he became a sort of a household name. He's kind of made himself now you're starting to hear murmurings, MVP in the American League. Sure, he's a dark horse, but just to get that kind of talk, it's amazing how far this guy's come over the last two seasons.
He's having a terrific year. There's no doubt, no denying that. I think if you look at his peripherals, the 926 OPS on the season stands out. 25 home runs at this point really stands out. And he's stayed healthy for the most part all season. I think that's the other interesting thing. Lindor is their best player. You mentioned it earlier. There's no denying that. But Ramirez is having a tremendous season and helping a team go on this run, this streak. Obviously, Corey Kluber has done that too. He's going to be in the mix for Cy Young. But for Ramirez, you know, like you said, he came on the scene last year, 25, 26 years old, still very, very young. And I don't think a lot of people knew of him until they saw him last year.
The only people in Cleveland that are not happy about this win streak, I think, are, and I don't know if you saw this story, but the window company, the glass company, that put it out there in July that if you did business with the company in July and the Indians managed to win 15 games in a row, which they'd never done in franchise history, this company was celebrating its 15th anniversary, they would rebate the money for all those deals in July. Sure enough, it happens. So a lot of money went the other way. They had insurance. They'll be fine. I know this happened back in 2007 in Boston. A New England furniture store ended up doing that during spring training. They had the same deal. The Red Sox ended up winning the World Series. A lot of people got free furniture. So one little thing is that a glass company in Cleveland is giving out a lot of money. But, hey, that just makes people happier. Right. All right, on the D-back side of things, it's 13 in a row, and that includes a sweep of the Dodgers. They win the season series over the Dodgers. Now, if things play out the way they are, the Nationals are trying to make a run at L.A., but if the Dodgers are the top seed, the D-backs win that wild card game, they go head-to-head. Suddenly, Arizona has a lot of confidence going into a series against a Dodgers team that 2 weeks ago we didn't think was beatable.
Yeah, and I think that interesting thing, like you said, they play back-to-back series. They sweep them in Arizona. They sweep them at home, in Dodger Stadium, which is not an easy feat to do. And you know, during this streak, the Diamondbacks have really taken off. Their starting rotation in particular really stands out, with Greinke obviously at the top. But Robbie Ray has been fantastic. Patrick Corbin has been really, really good. You know, Zach Godley. I don't want to forget about Godley or Walker. I mean, they really have a lot of names that you may not be household names, but they are really, really good. I think the interesting part about the Dodgers series is they didn't face Kershaw. They didn't face Darvish. They didn't face Alex Wood. So I don't want to take away from the sweeps. No doubt about it. But in the postseason, you'll be facing those three guns. And, you know, it's a little different. But they do hit left-handed pitching. The Diamondbacks do. And they know a lot about each other. You know, I think that's a very intriguing series if the Diamondbacks were to advance. And you know, it's likely they will have a home wild card play-in game. And with Zach Greinke on the mound, or Ray, let's say, they have a real good chance of matching up against the Dodgers the way it looks.
And Greinke's been so good at home, too. And he was good at his old home last week in L.A. beating the Dodgers. They got a huge lift, obviously. J.D. Martinez continues to hit home runs for this team. And you see with Paul Goldschmidt hurt this week, and he's expected to be back maybe as we record this Friday. He may be back in the lineup on Friday night. But he missed some games, and you wonder if you didn't have J.D. Martinez and what he's been able to do after they got him at the deadline, how much they would miss Goldie Moore.
Sure.
But they have that extra bat in the middle of the lineup, and he seems to have made the whole lineup better.
There's no doubt. And you know, I think, you know, with him being on the move to Arizona from Detroit, that lineup, you know, they were looking for a right-handed bat. You probably couldn't have designed it any better than to get a guy like JD, you know, just, you know, notwithstanding the fact that he had the game where he had four homers, but just overall his home run total, his right-handed, you know, the right-handed impact that he provided to that lineup, it's been special. And so when Goldie, you know, is in the lineup, by the way, MVP candidate, I mean, you have to look at him, how good he's been. And the fact that he's been runner-up or in the top three over the last couple of years, and now his team's doing well, he's going to be in that mix too. And, yeah, I think it always helps to be able to win and gives your team more confidence, not only beating the Dodgers, but doing it without your best player too.
So J.D. Martinez went to Arizona, and really the Tigers didn't get a whole lot back in that deal, but they traded Justin Verlander in what is a tremendous waiver deal, which we haven't seen a lot of in recent years, the big waiver deal. But Houston proving you can get it done. They sent a good amount, three solid prospects who are now all in the Tigers' top eight. But Verlander goes to Houston. They get McCullers back off the DL. So I was mentioning how maybe on paper Cleveland's the favorite in the American League now. But then suddenly you throw Verlander and McCullers into the mix in Houston, and now they're winning again.
Don't forget Cameron Maben on the move, too, from the Angels to the Astros. And, you know, he was a guy they picked up off of waivers. You know, the Angels picked up Justin Upton, so it made Maben expendable. But if you look at what those guys, you know, Maben's helped him win a game. Verlander, his first start against the Mariners was electric for six innings. Last pitch,
Pitch number 102 was 99 miles an hour. He wasn't amped up, was he? I mean, it was fantastic when you look at the overall rotation. Those three guys in particular, Verlander with his experience in the postseason, Keuchel the way he's pitched, and then McCullers if he's healthy, will match up against any team. Will match up well with the Indians who have real good starting rotation. So I think there's two elite teams in the American League. I think you hit on them both, Astros and the Indians.
And then you talk about other, you mentioned Upton going to the Angels, and that helped them as they make a run. And it's great to see the Angels make a run, just because when you have the best player in baseball, it's nice to see him in postseason contention. But the other interesting deal that went down before the waiver deadline was Juan Nicasio going from the Phillies to the Cardinals. And it's interesting because the Cardinals make a move to try to, I guess, last gasp effort. But the Phillies picked up Nicasio for free off waivers. He throws twice for them over 5 days, and they're able to deal him and get something. I mean, you got to give credit to Matt Klentak and company.
Klentak was on top of it. Listen, Nicasio has been a very effective middle reliever, eighth inning guy. Some questions there in Pittsburgh why they were willing to part ways with him and save money. But you know, I think what the Phillies did, they needed some bullpen depth. Then they decided to stick him through waivers. Cardinals needed bullpen because Rosenthal was out hurt. They put Lyons in the back end of the bullpen for them. They could use an eighth inning or seventh inning guy. They pick up Nicasio. But Klentak, the GM for the Phillies, you know, they're trying to improve a system that is getting stronger. They brought up a guy like Rhys Hoskins, and they have a couple other guys in their system, whether it's J.P. Crawford we'll get to. Scott Kingery may not be up. But they're building something pretty interesting, and making deals like that are really, really smart moves, especially, you know, having a rental for less than 5 days, 6 days, somewhere in that range.
The Pirates, I mean, obviously it's not great. It makes them look, I don't want to say bad, but apparently they had the chance to maybe trade him, but it was you wonder if it was maybe the Cardinals, a division opponent. They chose not to help out one of their rivals. So they let him go, and the Phillies pick him up, and then he ends up in St. Louis anyway. But if you're the Pirates, they save the money, but it's a chance where you could have had something you don't have, get anything. And for a team like the Pirates, they need every chance they can get, right, when taking advantage of every asset that they have.
Well, I think that's the thing. They've always had – they've been in the lower third when it comes to payroll over the years. They've had a great degree of success. Looks like they're going to be on the fringes, on the outside looking in this year, kind of like they were last year. But you know, they have a strong system, and they had an opportunity to try to get something in return for them. So I understand, having been in that situation before. You don't want to, if you can help it, help your division rival. So I want to say that it was more than just saving the money. I know from outside looking in, it looks. You do look at it skeptically, but you certainly don't want to hand deliver them within your division if you can help it. If it comes from somewhere else, then you can kind of live with yourself.
Yeah. Speaking of the Pirates, and despite that move, overall, Neil Huntington and company have done a tremendous job keeping that team in contention and getting to the playoffs consistently, really, over the last 5 years or so. He gets an extension, as does Clint Hurdle. So a disappointing 2017 season, but the hierarchy there in Pittsburgh is going to be around, and we'll have a chance to bounce back.
You know, consistency and continuity with that group. I mean, you know, they had that turnaround year, and when things were in jeopardy, I would say in that 2013 season, they end up winning, going on to the wild card game there. They lost back to back years in the wild card. Well, one was the LDS, and then back to back wild card losses. It's hard to imagine. 2015, they won 98 games.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was a golden opportunity for them to move on. If they had won that wild card game, they were good enough to go to the World Series. Now you have to regroup. The unfortunate thing is, 2016, you had a little step back. 2017, you're almost in that same boat. And we'll see. You know, they still have their margin of error is a little smaller than others because of their payroll. But I wouldn't bet against this front office group, and I wouldn't bet against Clint Hurdle, who's been doing this a long time.
Yeah, there's still a nucleus there, and if things go right, as opposed to they just kind of went wrong this season. Gerrit Cole had a really disappointing season, what you expect from him, and up and down that lineup, just kind of disappointing years. But you would expect if they get it together, make some moves, that's a team that could bounce back quickly. We mentioned the Angels and the waiver move to get Justin Upton and how he could help them. They also get Garrett Richards back, and he started Tuesday Just his second start of the year, 3 1/3 innings. And I, a lot of people said heading into the season, you know, back in the hot stove season, hey, if everything goes right with the Angels pitching and rotation, they could contend. Well, that didn't happen, but here they are. They're in the mix for that second spot in the American League, and now you get Richards back. How big a lift could he give this team over the next 3 weeks?
You know, he is their best pitcher. Like, yeah. If you were, you know, if he's healthy and they are one game plan, he's probably the starter, despite all the time he missed. You know, now a lot has to happen between now and then. He has to build up his pitch count. He has to, you know, obviously you want him to throw consistently, but he has the stuff. We know the high-end velocity is there, the fastball, the breaking ball. But I think, you know, when you add, you know, Richards, as you mentioned, and Skaggs has been back now for a little bit, and Heaney, who has pitched well here recently as well, that's a much different rotation than what they had for most of the year. So you add that, you add the offense. Upton was a huge pickup because, you know, Pujols has struggled offensively, gives some legitimate protection to Mike Trout, as you mentioned, best player in the game, of course. But Calhoun has swung the bat better. Simmons is having a great year. You know, now it's a much more versatile team. Their defense, I would argue, might be the best in baseball, if not in the American League.
You mentioned Heaney. Here's a guy who was a first-round pick, was highly touted prospect, but then just ended up bouncing around from team to team, and now maybe with the Angels, it kind of all works out. All right. When you talk about on the move in September, it's always lots of prospects coming up as rosters expand, teams bring up guys. Some of these guys are going to have a chance to have a play a factor, play a role in pennant races, if not make a postseason roster. Some of them are on teams that are kind of out of it. So there's a mix there, but I wanted to go through some of the real top guys with you, Duke. And one of them, when you talk about a guy that could help a team in the playoffs, Walker Buehler is the Dodgers' number one prospect. And we keep seeing Dodgers' number one prospects come in and immediately become superstars.
Yeah.
Corey Seager, Cody Bellinger, Jock Peterson at one point. He's obviously had a tough season. But they continue to produce these guys. But now Walker Buehler is a guy who's eventually going to be a starting pitcher. But he's going to work out of the bullpen here in October. How good is his stuff, and could he pitch in October?
You know, his stuff, they've had a little bit of an issue. Pedro Baez recently has been struggling. Their bullpen overall, Brandon Morrow's been good, but, you know, they've had some struggles in that position leading up to Kenley Jansen. And I think with Walker, it's hard to predict that he's going to be an impactful guy because you hardly ever see that. But, you know, we've seen it before back the other L.A. team, the Angels, you know, went back in, I think it was 02, and
K-Rod.
K-Rod came out, Francisco Rodriguez. And his September was so good, they added him to the roster and helped him in the postseason. Buehler has a chance to be that type of impact guy. We'll wait and see. We got to play it out. His first outing was very good, very dominant. His stuff is there, breaking ball, fastballs, high 90s. So he can be, you know, and it's a way for the Dodgers to protect the number of innings that he's going to pitch this year. So I wouldn't rule out him being a part of their postseason plans.
Yeah, and he'll eventually be a starter, unlike K-Rod, who became a closer, obviously, for all of his career. But Buehler was on that same Vanderbilt team with Dansby Swanson. And actually, our Jim Callis, John of the Mayo, had him ranked higher going into the draft than Swanson. Swanson ended up going number one overall. All right. Another guy that could play a factor now because the Orioles are suddenly making a little bit of a run in the American League, Austin Hayes, who, I mean, not a top pick, third-round pick, but in short time, he has become a big-time prospect.
You know, in 2016 draft, out of Jacksonville University, college player, but he's flown through the Orioles system, but played at Double-A. They skipped him over Triple-A, brought him up to the big leagues here for September. You know, it's hard to know how he'll impact him. You know, he certainly seems like Buck Showalter is going to use him against lefties in particular, but he's a plus defender. He can play center field. He's not going to take the position from Adam Jones yet, maybe down the road. But, you know, he's that good of a defender, and he's 30-plus homer guy. He has legit tools. You look at his numbers overall, some of the best that you're going to find in the minor leagues, rising up a lot of the draft, a lot of these prospect boards, including here MLB Pipeline. So, with Callis and Mayo. So I wouldn't rule out, you know, him having some kind of impact. It's hard to think that he would have a major impact, though. But if you go back to what they did with Trey Mancini last year, the Orioles, when they brought Mancini into the lineup, you know, he produced. And I think that's what Hayes could do, too.
Victor Robles is up with the Nationals. He's their number one prospect. It seems like that roster, as far as looking to the postseason and 25 guys, is kind of set. But a nice chance for him to get a taste here. Another a talented guy that, with a lot of tools.
Nice chance there. He's a plus defender, so worst case, you could bring him up, you know, have him be a, you know, a late inning defensive replacement late in September. I think he gives, because they're going to clinch pretty soon here, you know, he might get an opportunity to play 3 days a week and spell all of the outfielders, whether it's Kendrick, Worth. They got to get Harper back,
yeah.
You know, but if he doesn't, Harper doesn't come back, you know, this is Robles might have an opportunity. We'll wait and see, but he's a guy that you're getting him the experience now in September because he's going to be an impactful player for you next year.
All right, a couple more guys. Francisco Mejia, who is a catching prospect, number one prospect for the Indians. People may remember he had the crazy hit streak a year ago. Almost was traded at the deadline. It fell through. He ended up staying in Cleveland. And now the Indians are at a point where they kind of have catchers, so he's going to be tried out around. Is he? I don't know how much you know of him defensively, obviously, right, as a catcher, but do you think he's the type of guy who could maybe find a home somewhere else?
Well, it's an interesting one because I think, you know, you mentioned Gomes, Perez, they have the defensive edge there, and learning the staff at this point, it's not fair for Mejia. But, yeah, if you can find him, somehow find him a different role, I think, you know, you hate to give up guys who have that type of offensive ability, switch hitter, he can really hit. So I wouldn't rule out another position for him at some point. You know, I certainly wouldn't rule out him catching in the future for them. But it's one of those where, you know what, you're always looking for talented players. And if you have one in your own system, bring him up and you know, let him maybe pinch hit or spell a guy. I think, you know, they give you that burst of energy, that depth of the roster that you're always looking for.
It's not a lot of backstops with the type of hit tool that Mejia has either, so certainly value there. And final guy I wanted to talk to you about, mentioned a little bit earlier, and that's J.P. Crawford, a guy that I think if things had gone differently for him and maybe the Phillies, we would have seen him a lot sooner. Had a dreadful first half of the season, basically, and he's a guy who's a good shortstop who was touted as great plate discipline. It had been a struggle, and really off and on throughout the minors, but the second half of the season in Lehigh Valley, the AAA team there, it finally seemed to click, and now he's being rewarded. Obviously, the Phillies far from contention, so you would expect to see Crawford quite a bit here in September.
I would think so, you know, and I think that's going to be interesting, you know, how they kind of play that out. But he's their shortstop of the future, whether it's beginning of next year or some point next year. You know, it wouldn't hurt him if he went back to the minor leagues for a short period of time in April, you know, to hone his offensive abilities. He's going to be the long-term guy. I mean, a lot of comparisons to Jimmy Rollins, but regardless of that, he's an impactful guy, and I think Pete McCann, the manager there, is going to be forced to play him, you know, and Galvis has been good for him along the way, but I think there's a way to find playing time for all of those guys, and certainly Crawford is going to be an impactful player.
Yeah, you wonder if Galvis's days as a shortstop are numbered now, and he may end up being at second base next year. We'll see. Crawford may get some time at third base down the stretch this year. He played a couple of games in the minors before getting called up at third. We'll see just to get him in the lineup. But there you go. That's going to do it for this edition of On the Move, the podcast presented by Penske. We've covered a little bit of everything with players and managers and all-around teams on the move throughout Major League Baseball. Thanks for joining us. For Jim Duquette, I'm Tim McMaster. This has been On the Move, presented by Penske.